Session number 27345, reel 10.
So it's Chilton reel 10.
Yes, and let's say you set your depth charge. And as I say, they're either rolled off the stern on the rails, because you've got them, you've seen them yourself at stop, or they throw them. Now, at first, they just used to throw the depth charge, and the thrower used to just drop off into the sea. But they found, some boffin found, that if you wired the depth charge to the thrower, it would give it extra weight, and it would go down faster, and it would go down deeper, and you had more shrapnel, because when it blew, it also blew the thrower out of it, so you got more depth and more explosion from your depth charge.
What kind of depths could you set it to?
Oh, you could go down to 400, 500 feet. Very deep, very deep. Oh, yes.
And would you set them, would they be set at, if you were on the ship, would they be set at different depths?
No, none would be set at all. Not while they're on the deck. It's only when you're going in for an attack that you set the depth charge. You do not, they are not primed, they are not set, nothing. You don't. I mean, you could go into action, you could get a shell, hit the depth charge, and blow it a lot. Well, it would blow it a lot, but if you had a detonator in there, anything could happen.
So, but if you went into attack, would they then be set at different depths rather than one single depth?
The bridge would notify the quarter deck where the depth charges are. Settings to be done on rails, settings so and so, throwers, settings so and so. Then they would fire them from the bridge, because they were remote controlled. On the bridge used to be all the buttons to fire. Brass, little green one, little green button, brass button. Yeah.
You also mentioned you were doing more training on torpedoes.
Yes.
I don't think we talked about it earlier, but how do you fire a torpedo from a tube?
It's done by compressed air. There's compressed air on the tube, and that fired it. It goes out. You've seen them probably as you would. They go out and whoosh, don't they? Well, directly that goes out, there's a propeller on the front, and that propeller starts the torpedo. And the compressed air, it's got compressed air compartments inside the torpedo, and the one is already revolving as you fired it, because you've set off the, it's all done by, you know, levers, the lever clicks this over, and the air starts turning the wheel. But the one in the front, that will revolve, and while it's revolving, that's the one that sets the torpedo to be armed. That's the one that has the pistol in again. And as the torpedo, and as the propeller is going around in the front, it's lowering the pistol down into the primer. But the actual drip, the actual torpedo being driven, is done by compressed air bottles inside. And you set your depth and your speed as well.
And with the tubes, are they movable?
Oh yes, because when you've got your tubes, and you're at sea, and they're fore and aft, and they can swivel right out like that. They can either go port or starboard, either ways. That's why we lost our torpedo tubes, because they couldn't do it because of the mine rails. That's the reason why.
And how would they be aimed then, if you were going?
Well, they would be off the side, and of course you can't more or less aim them. You can't say, well, if you can put your torpedo tubes at an angle, you would go out, and then you would say they could come back to a 45 degree angle, and you would shoot it that way. The sighting of it is done by the way the ship's travelling. See, when you've seen them on the telly, and you see the destroyer going in, and you see him go racing all them alongside, all of a sudden these tubes come out. And that's how it's done. It's done actually by the captain. The captain is the one that can tell it, and he's the one that fires them. Or, shall I say, the torpedo officer, he's the one that fires them up on the bridge.
And where would you store your torpedoes?
You only carry 10. You've got no space for carry anymore. Not on board ship. Not on the destroyer. You haven't got the room. You haven't got room to stow torpedoes, and you wouldn't have there's nowhere you can go with them in any case.
Sounds like you enjoyed this work with being a torpedo man.
I did. I learnt quite a lot before I even went to be a seaman torpedo man, which held me in very, very good stead. Because, as I say, I passed for seaman torpedo man, and when I got back to Chatham Barracks, I thought, well, I'll wait for a ship now. I'm a rating. I'm a seaman torpedo man. I'm now a rating. And I'd now become an AB. I'd automatically become an able seaman. So I was an able seaman torpedo man. I thought, rather proud I was. I was rather proud. But I was in barracks for about a week, and they sent for me down to the first lieutenant's office, drafting office, and he said, "We're sending you back to the Vernon." I said, "I've only just come back. I've only just been made a seaman torpedo man." He said, "Yes." He said, "But your marks were so high." He said, "And we are very, very short of seaman torpedo men and leading torpedo operators." He said, "We think you can go through for a leading torpedo operator." He said, "So." I said, "So I'll have no experience as a seaman torpedo man." He said, "But you have had, haven't you?" I said, "You know, we find out." He said, "You have had some experience on board ship, haven't you?" Oh, I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you've got such good marks as a seaman torpedo man, we want you to go through for a leading torpedo operator. So we're sending you back down there." So I went back down again. And I was down there 3 months for an LTO course. Normally it's about 6 months, but they cut it by half.
And how did that contrast with the course that you'd just done? What were the added things you had to know?
Oh, much more complicated, because you learnt nearly all the basic electrics then about it. And the only electrics you didn't learn very much about was the gun control, because that was all done by low power. That was done by 22 volts. Everything else was 110, you see. So you had to be a LTO, low power, to deal with all gun circuits and everything else. But you dealt with all the other circuits, batteries. All the batteries came underneath you see. And you did all the electrics, fans, the lot. Searchlight, all come under you. Depth charges, torpedoes, steaming lights. I've been up the mast while we've been at sea, and the steaming light's gone out, and I've had to get up and replace a new bulb in the steaming light. Not a very nice experience with a ship going a little bit like that.
So really the role of a torpedo man at that period was the ship's electrician.
Very essential.
Was there at that time a trade of electrician in the Navy, or is that a post-war trade?
There is an electrical ERA, engine room artificer, an electrical engine room, which is a much higher branch of the electrics, which you always carried, more or less, one of them. But you always carried a torpedo officer in any case. So and he was more advanced with electrics. But you also had torpedo gunners' mates, and they were the cream.
So you would be involved in, obviously you would only really be at your torpedo role in action or your action
on the
station.
Torpedo, yeah.
So the rest of the time while you're on the ship,
you're doing the electrics. Any bulbs go, and he's got to go like that. So.
And well, I'm thinking of modern ships. There's an awful lot of electrics involved. What degree of electrics existed within a destroyer at that time, say? Would you have full lighting throughout the ship?
Oh yeah, darkened ship, because as you know, you used to darken the ship and you used to have red bulbs and blue bulbs when you come out, when you went underneath the forecastle, the fore part, into the mess deck, you walked into a blue light, then into a red light, and then you got on the mess deck into normal light. Because all the dead lights would be down, there'd be no light showing at all. But you didn't go straight into a night vision straight into ordinary lighting, you had to go into in a various state of blue and red.
So you completed a 3-month course there.
And I passed, and I was very, very pleased. I thought, right, rather proud of myself actually, that I'd done the seaman, torpedoman, and the LTO. But I hadn't had a lot of experience. Not as much as I should have. But I got, when I got back to Chatham, I stayed there a fortnight. I was in there. And I was allowed to go on leave, a week's leave. And then I got a draft. I would pick up a sloop at Grimsby Docks as a leading torpedo operator. And when I thought, well, I wonder what she is. I found out that she was a sloop, a small one. I thought, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. A lot of convoy work. But when I finally got on board and saw her, it wasn't a convoy work very, very much. She was a survey ship. She was a survey ship. She carried 2 5-ton motorboats that were miniature ships on their own that you could go and stay to sea all day, and you'd have and they had echo sounders on them, you know, depth recorders. And that's another thing. The echo sounders are usually the responsibilities of the ASDIC ratings. Well, as she was a survey ship, she didn't carry an ASDIC rating. They didn't require one. But we carried depth charges, but she didn't require an ASDIC operator, which I thought was funny at the time. But it was, the torpedo gunner's mate told me, he said, in case we have to drop charges, Tom, that's why we've got them. He said, but we can't chase, we couldn't find a sub. If we saw one on the surface, we could fire it. We had a 3-inch gun. He said we could fire it, and we had quite a lot of anti-aircraft guns. We had the latest Oerlikon guns, and we had a more or less a Chicago piano that's used to shove out 1-inch shells. Very good. So we were well protected in that respect, but we couldn't, we weren't a fighting ship.
I don't think you've mentioned the name of the ship on that.
HMS Franklin. HMS Franklin.
So what was her proposed role then, if she was a survey ship? What were you going to do with her?
We were doing survey. You know Loch Huey, the big lock that they surveyed and where all the convoys met? And where we surveyed that. It took us 3 months to do that lock. We went across them like that. It's quite a big lock. And our 2 motorboats did all that. And the ship. The ship carried an echo sounder, and we had quite a lot of officers. We had more officers than normally because they were surveyors, and they'd be shooting, you know, with their theodolites, and there'd be a lot of stuff that was double dutched to me, but they were there. And in the motorboat would be an officer as well, and they also had men that were. Survey ratings. They were actually there was a rating, survey rating, and they used to in the motorboat. You'd have the crew, which was a coxswain and one. You'd have the engine room, stoker, because of the motor in the boat was quite big, and in the stern, and the stern was about from here to that wall. It was quite a big stern. That's the length of it, that's the length of the stern, because in front of that was the engine room, and then there was the bow. But this part was well laid out, because there was a chart table, and the officer and the survey rating would be charting, you see. And they also had an echo sounder in them, so the echo sounder was going, and that became my responsibility. I'd never been trained on an echo sounder. But as we didn't carry an ASDIC rating, it came to us. And so we were responsible for the echo sounders. So, and the only torpedoman on HMS Franklin was the torpedo gunner's mate, who was the actual person in charge. There was nobody higher than him. No officer in the electrical side. He was the kingpin smashing men, great, great men. Me, as an LTO, well, only one LTO, and one seaman torpedo man. The torpedo gunner's mate, when the ship was doing surveying, he would be up on the bridge reading the echo sounder, and I am the seaman torpedo. One would be in one boat and one would be in the other, reading all the echo sounders on. So we won another job. I didn't know the first thing about them, but the TI had a course, and because he showed us what to do, because we had to keep them up to date, clean them and so forth and such. Which,
what did the echo sounder look like? What
was so it? Box like that, and there's a paper, iodized paper on a roll, and then you've got your stylus going across it, and it's going up there, and as you're going along, so it is recording. And of course they know where the survey part is, and they can easily pick up the depth off of these rolls of film.
So where was the first place that you started to survey once you joined the ship? Where did you go to first?
The first place that we went to, as far as I can remember, was back up north. We went up north, and we were surveying off Scapa Flow. Don't know what we were doing. Well, channels, mostly channels, because a lot of traffic was coming that way, and that's where we started. But we went all over the place. We went to King's Lynn, and we surveyed a channel from the sea right into King's Lynn, because King's Lynn became quite a big port eventually. We spent a month in there surveying the channel for that. And we went to, you remember the old saying on the television about Star Trek, we go where no man has been before. Well, this was the motto of the survey ship. We went where no other ship went before.
So you were really, because of the increased wartime traffic, you were surveying what, coastal inlets, rivers,
everything.
Locks, that sort of thing?
Yes, everything. We even surveyed E-boat Alley, you know, up off Lowestoft in Yarmouth, where all the E-boats used to have their fights with the MTBs and them else. We surveyed up there, and we used to anchor just underneath the cliffs. And of a night time, you could see the fighting going on amongst the E-boats and MLs, the motor torpedo boats. You could hear it. We were tucked right away out of the way, because it was too far to go back to port and keep coming out every day. So we stayed there for about a week. And we were very, 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 very dodgy, I might tell you. But anchoring off E-boat Alley, terrible place.
Would you keep... You kept all the watches?
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Two watches, port and starboard, all the time. But it was hard work. You did a lot of hard work. Nobody was excused on there. When your boats were hoisted, and I mean, everybody must have hoist boats and everything else. It was hard work.
Sounds quite interesting.
Very, very interesting indeed. And we carried a diver. Now, here again, I get called in, because normally the LTOs look after the divers, and because she was a survey ship, she carried a diver, but normally divers are not on them, kept off of small ships like that. But she did carry a diver, and his name was Tubby Nell, and he had done 19 years in the Navy, and he was a real three badger. He knew all the tricks of the trade. He taught me quite a lot. But anyway, I had to look after him, because he had to go down to walk the seabed sometimes. And you know the forts that they laid off the coast? We surveyed the beds for those. Because they came out on a platform, and they were sunk. And they had to be towed out. And they opened up the seacocks, and she... And we all thought they were going to turn over, because we always watched it. And went up, and the platform they were on started to get the water in, and to tip a bit like that. Then all of a sudden the water would rush in, and the whole lot would sink. But he had to walk every one of those beds to make sure that they were even and no problems. And they were sandy and everything else. And I was his only lifeline, because I was the one On the no, I was the one with the headphones on. I was the contact, his contact, because it was all done by wires, you see. And I had to look after him. And he used to tell me, a bit more air, Tom, a bit faster, lower, lower. And in the end, we got to the state, and he used to do quite a lot of diving trips. And I said to him one day, I said, well, anything happens, you're going to come down. He said, you are. So what do you mean I am? Well, he said, I'm going to train you to be a diver, or so far to be just quick in case anything does happen. He said, we'll get you used to the suit and walking. He said, but he said, I'm sorry, he said, the captain has refused to let you go down. He said, but you're going to get all used to it, Tom. He said, and you know a little bit about it. He said, if I want help, he said, you'll come down quickly. He said, we shall help ourselves. But I was... See, it was another job that you win. You didn't realise that you had to attend to the... And because you had to make sure that all his headphones in his suit were all right. You had to check them. You had to check it to the headphones on board, you see. And so I won a lot more little jobs that I wasn't due to do, really.
Tell me about the suit.
Oh, hell, half heavy. Especially when you put the boots on. You can hardly lift them. You can hardly lift them. And then he's got the weights that you put round the neck and round the back. But you don't put those on until he's over the side. He gets over the side, and then you put those weights on him when he's on his ladder, because he can get down the ladder quite easy. So it's extra weights to hold him. And then you wash his little mirror, clean it. Okay, I'm ready. Anyway, pump, and there'd be four men on the pump, big pump like this, on the wheel, one on two that side and two this side, and pump away.
And would you help him put his helmet on?
I would do everything for him. I had to look, I had to dress him.
So how did you get the helmet on?
It gets on and it locks. It's just a twist lock. But inside, there is a little catch that he locks himself.
Must be quite a responsibility that you were in there, because there was no other... No
well, it was, and to be quite truthful, I was a little bit scared sometimes, and I thought, what am I going to do? I've never been down in a suit before. You know, but these were the things that would have been expected of you if the moment had arrived. So, you did quite a lot of jobs that you didn't train for. You see, but then you didn't do a lot of the jobs that you trained for. You didn't do the torpedoes and things like that, you see, because you didn't carry any.
So you were on the Franklin for...
I was on the Franklin for nearly 5 years, because this here again is when we come back to when I altered my mind. I'd got married on the Franklin, and then my wife had a baby girl in 44, and I was, and this is fine, that's what finally clinched it, because they knew that I wasn't in a lot of action from then on. And my sister always said to me, your first year was enough action for anybody to last anybody in the whole war. She said, you saw enough in the first year for anybody. You stay on board the Franklin. She doesn't have to go into fighting, but she does go in some dangerous little places, she said, which you can't be off. And it was the family that really talked me out and kept me to stay on, because I wanted to go through for leading seaman. I thought, more money, you see. I thought I'd go through for leading seaman. But if I'd have gone through for leading seaman, I would have had to leave the Franklin, because she was only entitled to torpedo gunner's mate, one LTO able seaman, and a seaman torpedo, not an LTO leading seaman. She wouldn't be allowed to have another leading seaman on board.
But did you go across the Channel at all after D-Day?
Oh yes, when D-Day went, we went over the next day, and that's when we stayed off in the quiet out of the way, saw all that was happening. And then we went up to Cherbourg, when they captured Cherbourg.
So did you have any work off the beaches at all?
No, we were not beach workers. We were depths, waters. We were attached to the Americans at one time, because they wanted a job done, and we did it for them, because they didn't have no survey ships or nothing.
What was that job?
We had, it was down near the Solent, and that was when they were building all the forces up to go for D-Day, and they had to make sure for their landing craft what it was like. And so we had to survey all the sea off the Solent so that they could use their landing craft to see what it was like. So we did do our job, we did do our bit.
But when you went over to Cherbourg, were you surveying the port once it had been captured?
The minesweepers went in first, swept it, and when they said it was clear, we went in.
And what were you to do there? Was that to discover the survey?
We were to survey the depths, yeah. So that they, because being Cherbourg, they could get, instead of having to come right into the UK, into England, they could unload their ships in Cherbourg and take them overland, which would have been far quicker, instead of coming right down, say, to Portsmouth and places like that to unload and then go back again. But they could unload the vessels in Cherbourg and be already on the land. And they had to go over land, because their railway network was very, very clever there.
And would you be surveying wrecks as well? Obviously, I'm thinking of somewhere like Cherbourg, probably have quite a few wrecks.
Oh, yes, we pinpointed the wrecks. Oh, yes, they were pinpointed. Because that's what they had to do. See any wrecks in the way, and of course, he did do a lot of sinking there. He did sink quite a few ships there, and he also left some booby traps there.
Well, take me through from the start, going into Cherbourg, if you want to.
Well, after the minesweepers went, we went in, and we went alongside the wharf, tied up. We lowered the boats, motorboats first, because we had to have one side and one the other. So we lowered those first, and then we went in and tied up. And then the boats were brought round the stern, and the survey started. The boats started to crisscross the harbour, surveying, taking depths and everything else. And we were just on board doing our normal duties, you see, while this was being done. Then all of a sudden we had a panic stations. We were told that we had to leave the wharf immediately, because they'd found a mine underneath us. And so we moved and they cleared the mine and we went back. We were safe then, we knew we were alright. We was in there about 5 or 6 days surveying.
You said the Germans had left some booby traps.
Oh yes, they booby trapped everything. On shore, you weren't allowed ashore, because it was all army there that was doing it. They were finding the booby traps. And also, the rail network there was still, I understand, in pretty good condition at the time, because the French resistance had managed to stop them being blown up and everything else. Of course, don't forget, it was from Cherbourg that he used to send his flying bombs over. That was where these great big ramps were.
What was the state of the docks then?
Mashed up. All the buildings were blown up and everything else. It was desolate. It was just desolate.
Would you have thought it would have been easy to reopen as a docks area?
Oh, they did. They did reopen it. They got their bulldozers in and cleared it and reopened it right the way through. And they had quite a lot of, as I say, a lot of materials went in through Cherbourg, because it could go straight onto the railway and be taken from a long, long way, you see.